Hello, this is Randy Cantrell from BulaNetwork.com, and no, I am not in the yellow studio, and the sound certainly betrays me. But this is the power of a digital audio recorder and a field microphone. Technology today is amazing and I think rather wonderful. A few things are on my mind, and yes, I often do pack a field microphone and a digital audio recorder, because you never know. You never know when I might find someone who has some wisdom that I would like to capture, some conversation that I might like to record. And I often do such things. I don't often share those, and quite frankly, the reason is pretty simple. I really don't want to impose on people's privacy, and I really am fond of capturing conversations that I realize might never be repeated again. There are a lot of smart people in the world, certainly a lot of people smarter than I am, and I'm often honored to have some pretty interesting, if not riveting, conversations. Some people are put off by being recorded, but increasingly in this day and age of social media and openness and transparency, two terms that just get battered about, I'm finding people are more forthcoming than they once were. But I'm old enough to remember such things. A couple of things are on my mind today, none the least of which is the realization that there is a tremendous amount of pain. And I somewhat reluctantly, with some hesitation, am going to tell a few stories in hopes that they might provide some inspiration for those of you that are suffering the woes of the current economic times. Times, by the way, which many of us, myself included, believe are likely to be the norm for a very long time. How long is very long? I don't know. It would not surprise me if the balance of this decade and even into the next, if we kind of continued along the same path that we're on right now. This is a global thing. This is not a U.S.-based thing. And, of course, as we come up on an election year here in the States, lots of conversation about jobs and lots of conversation about the economy, lots of conversation about education, but it really, I think it really all stems and boils down to the economy. We look at schools and we look at the preparation of our children for tomorrow's world, and well, the economic engine is going to be greatly determined by what these kids grow up doing. I'm not going to wax terribly political because, well, quite frankly, I'm not very political. In fact, I'm not political at all. I do have some opinions, and I have freely confessed before that those opinions are deeply steeped in my fondness of and my practice of capitalism. I do believe that entrepreneurship, I do believe that the power of an individual to carve out his or her way, to find some meaningful way to contribute to society, I believe it can be a huge catalyst, at least for the economic woes that we have. I watched with great interest last night, and as I'm recording this, it is Saturday, October the 15th, 2011. And last night, Diane Sawyer on, I guess it would be 2020, had a special report on children who are growing up on Native American reservations. And we've seen this before. Deplorable conditions. Was reported, I believe, that in the adult population, an 80% alcoholism rate. A rather deplorable situation. And I think most any sane, reasonable person would acknowledge that. And as you look at the reservation, and of course, here we are in Texas, and just north of us is the Sooner State, Oklahoma, the land of my birth, by the way. And in Oklahoma, just across the Red River, north of Texas, is a huge, huge casino. And this part of the country, we have a number of casinos that are operated in basically what is Indian territory, or on land that is owned and operated by various Indian nations. But you don't find much else. You don't find much else in the way of commerce, and I've always found that somewhat, I don't know, somewhat perplexing. But last night, one of the people who worked in the office of this particular reservation where Diane Sawyer was had commented that the red tape is ridiculous. The governmental regulations, in her opinion, she stated, were more stringent than a nuclear power plant. If that's true, then we have our answer as to why there is no entrepreneurship happening throughout the Indian nation. I'm not making some statistical truth here. Now, I'm just making kind of a sociological observation, and believe me, I'm a rank amateur at best. But when you look at that situation, you look at these people, and you look at this population among us, and you see the conditions, and you see zero entrepreneurship. And one of the first things that I remember commenting to my wife last night, I said, you know, yeah, you look at the Amish people, and here are people that do not embrace modern technology, and yet have been throughout the ages very entrepreneurial, market their wares, live off of the land, and admittedly, there are extraordinarily different spiritual circumstances between these two cultures. But it just from the entrepreneurial vantage point, it's intriguing to me. I don't know necessarily why that is, and I wish I had some answers. But if I had my way, I would certainly encourage young Native Americans to embrace entrepreneurship. But alas, I don't know all the difficulties. I don't know all the roadblocks. I don't know all the hurdles that they face. And clearly, they're staggering. They're staggering, to say the least. It does indicate, clearly, last night's program and many others like it, indicate the level of pain throughout the world. Not just among these people, but among all people of all color, of all races, of all religious beliefs. There are people who are suffering. Now, there are always going to be people who suffer. Christ himself said, we'd have the poor with us always, and we will. But I do believe that we have people who could improve themselves, who could improve their circumstances and their condition in life. Now, we're always going to have some people who believe that someone else should take care of them. And here in America, a capitalist like myself, I'm not terribly fond of that notion. I'm not terribly fond of the whole entitlement thing. And in fact, last night, there were two young people who had gained advantage, gained opportunity from the reservation. And one young lady had gone on to Harvard. Another young man, I'm not sure what his educational pedigree was, but these were two very, very educated and very thoughtful young Native Americans. And the commentary from both of them was, some of the more interesting commentary of the evening for me. The young man in particular made note that there needed to be places of commerce. There needed to be shopping centers. There needed to be stores. There needed to be a variety of things. But that, you know, the government sends in trucks with processed food. The diabetic rate among these people is enormous. They eat a high starch, high carbohydrate diet. And, you know, one of the comments he made is he said, you know, when you are rewarded for having children, then, you know, our teenage pregnancy rate is crazy high. The dropout rate in school as a result is also high. The education, the advanced education opportunities are quite limited because, well, you just feel like it's more worthwhile to just sit back and do nothing and let someone take care of you, even if they're not taking very good care of you. And the government certainly is not taking good care of these people. But I think he's right. I think he's absolutely right. I think it does speak to the fact that we can grow complacent and we adapt. We adapt. And when people say, well, here's what we're going to do for you, then we tend to be robbed of the initiative to do things for ourselves. So what's the point of all of this? I think the point is to, well, two thoughts come to my mind. One is all of the people who are looking externally, just as this young man observed, truckloads of food come and people realize, well, the more kids we have, the more food we get, the more kids we have, the more welfare we get, and so forth. It just robs people of their dignity. It robs people of their initiative. It robs people of their ability to dream and their ability to innovate and be creative and to take what control they can of their life. Now, I'm not a person who believes that we have all the control in the world over our lives. There are people who do. There are people who believe in the law of attraction and the secret and you can be anything you want to be. I'm not one of those people. I do not believe in the secret. I do not believe in the law of attraction. I do believe in doing good. I do believe in living a life of honesty and integrity, and I do think that you reap what you sow. The Bible teaches it, and nature demonstrates it to us quite readily. We go up to various plants, and we fully know what we're going to get. If it's a fruit tree, we know that when my wife has planted some tomato plants at home, and well, we're not expecting okra from those because you reap what you sow. And we all know that. We all understand it. But when it comes to our lives, we somehow con ourselves into believing that, well, we can reap something different. We can reap something different. I read with interest the story just this week of a man that I knew many years ago, 20 years ago, and was not a person that I socialized with, but was a person that I knew, and we had kids the same age. And I found out he's been in prison for 5 years for multi-million-dollar fraud. Who knew? You know, who knew? Well, here's a man that I can promise you was not expecting to reap what he sowed. He was clearly expecting to reap enormous financial benefits and get away with it. Well, he didn't. 10-year prison sentence, $11 million restitution, and I couldn't tell you what has happened of his family. But I think about him, and I've thought about him this past week, and I have thought about, yeah, reaping what you sow and many other things. We tend to expect that our life would be made better if some external circumstance would go our way. You know, if only I got that job, if only that outfit would give me an interview, I know I could dazzle them. If only that outfit would offer me the position, I know I could do a good job and I know that my world would change. So many people are living in the land of if only. And I guess I'm compelled to hit record today to drag this audio gear out of the bag, because it saddens me that so many people live in the land of if only. And I'd like to propose an if only. If only you would look outside yourself when it comes to, well, when it comes to spiritual things. Now, you may not have any faith at all. You may not believe in a God in heaven like I do. You may not believe that Jesus Christ was the Son of God like I do. And that's fine. And this isn't some religious podcast. But, you know, when something that monumental, when some faith that monumental has such an enveloping role in a person's life as it does mine, I would just be disingenuous if I didn't at least acknowledge it. And so I do acknowledge it. And I do believe that we are best served if we will look outside ourselves and realize, you know, the world doesn't revolve around me. The world doesn't revolve around you. That there is some bigger purpose here. I don't waste any time at all, and I never have, in wondering, why am I here? Why am I here? What's my calling? Well, I know what my calling is, and I know what my purpose is. And mine is no different than yours, by the way. The Scripture tells us that God is no respecter of persons. There are people that believe God speaks to them directly and that God directs their life in a miraculous divine intervention sort of a way. Unfortunately, the Scripture doesn't teach us that. The Scripture rather teaches us that we have been created for the glory of the Creator. And yes, I believe in the Creator and I believe He's God. And so for the praise and the glory of God were we created, there's the purpose, there's the calling. Now within the context of that, there are a variety of choices. God gave the first man and woman the power of choice. They didn't have to obey Him, and they chose not to, and paid the price, and all of us along with them. You and I have a choice. I believe outside of ourselves we should look spiritually. I think we are best served to do that. I think you're best served to seek God. Other than that, I just really have a hard time with people who want to look externally for all of the answers in that we expect our government, whether you live in America or not, whatever government you are under the power of, we expect the government to take care of us. We expect the government to do things for us so that we don't have to do them ourselves. I don't know where along the way we lost our minds and we lost our way, but government clearly exists to prevent chaos. Government clearly exists to, well, to provide some protection and defense, but we've cast so much more on the shoulders of government that I personally don't necessarily subscribe to, that government should do all kinds of things for us aside from allowing us to live some peaceable life, some life without chaos, some life where at least crime is held accountable and where hooligans don't run the day. But I believe rather now, once you get a step beyond looking outside yourself for spiritual answers, now I believe it's time to look inside, and I believe it's time to look inside as to what are our capacities, what are our dreams, what are our aspirations, what can we do? What can we do to contribute? It has been said that this whole business with our government, as I record this, the jobs bills that you see bantered about so much, and we're going to put people to work, and you know, well, the government has always said that to us. I'm rather fond of the whole notion of a free agent nation. I'm rather fond of an individual who decides, you know, here's an opportunity, here's a skill that I have, and I realize that there are some people out there that might pay me to provide some value, some service for them, and I can do that. Now, I do understand that there are business people, there are entrepreneurs, and they judge their success by how many jobs they can create. And I think for some, that's a grand and noble thing. It's not my thing, but it is the thing for some. I've listened to countless entrepreneurs talk through the years, and I've heard some recently who have said that, wouldn't it be great? They think, wouldn't it be great if they could develop some enterprise and they could create hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs? Well, certainly, that would be great, and that would be wonderful if that's what they want to do. You happen to be listening to the voice of a person who wants no employees. Been there, done that. And it's not that I have anything against it. It's just that I've done it, and I'm at a stage of my life where I am not ambitious. I'm not ambitious at all to pursue that. And I think that there are countless people on the planet who have skills, a variety of skills. And it doesn't have to be, I was talking with an individual just a week or so ago about the prospect of something that she could do at home. She has small children, and I began to talk to her about the possibility. She has good high-speed internet connection. She has a certain level of administrative kind of talent and skill. And I said, why don't you think about becoming a virtual assistant? The elephant in the room in the conversation was simply this. How? How does one go about that? And so I began to give her some ideas and some thoughts. And I said, I don't profess to know. I don't happen to be running any kind of a school for virtual assistants, but I do know of some people who do. And I passed on some websites and some other information, and I said, you know, what if you could work from home and you could make $10, $12, $15 an hour and possibly get one, two, maybe three clients and work so many hours a week for each of these people? And how meaningful would that be? Well, that would be a life changer. In her world, it would be a life changer. And there are so many people out there. I think one of the big things that I've observed in this calendar year, the year of 2011, probably more so than any other year that I can recall, and maybe it's just me growing older, and maybe, hopefully, it's me growing a little bit wiser, I have observed that people really discount what they know. They really discount the value that they have. And I don't know necessarily why that is so. Now, I'm not a big believer that people should be pompous and arrogant and, oh, I'm great and I'm wonderful and the world owes me. No, but at the same time, there are people who look at their life and they look at their skill set and they say, I have nothing to offer. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. And that's the point. The point of today's recording is to tell you, don't give up hope. And don't give up your dreams. Now, I'm not declaring that everybody has a right to make $1 million, but you certainly have the wherewithal. I think most people have the wherewithal to find something meaningful that they can provide of service. If we look back to ancient times and we look back to whether it's artisans or merchants, you know, people found a way. They found a way to provide something of value to the society in which they lived for which people would pay them. Now, it might be somebody paid you a chicken, but you got payment. There was some value exchange that happened because you had something to offer. And you could do it as well or better than anybody else in your community. And people just kind of picked themselves up and figured it out. And people just kind of took it one day at a time and thought, you know, I've got to find a way. Now, is it because they had no safety net? Is it because they lived in a time where they couldn't look at the government to give them a handout? I don't know. Is it because they lived in a time where there weren't all these shiny objects, and it was just today we have to live? I mean, there is something to the simplicity of knowing that today I got to go find food. Tonight I got to find a place to shelter myself from the weather. Today I've got to make sure I've got whatever clothing I need to endure the elements. No, I don't want to go back to that, that's for sure. But I do think that it's probably wise for us to try to get some mindset where we approach every day with, I got to do what I got to do. I think we get so hung up, and I'm I'm Mr. Anti-Passion when it comes to everybody talking about, well, find your passion, the money will follow. No, it won't. I'll tell you who tells you that. The people who tell you that are the people who happen to have a passion for something and it worked out for them. They did find a way to make a living with their passion. But for every one of those that lines up to tell their story, I can promise you I'll find 10 others who will tell you a very different story. That they tried to pursue something that they were passionate about, and they failed miserably. And in many cases, they not only failed miserably, but they lost everything that they had because they bought into the whole notion, the lie that society tells us, that follow your passion and the money will follow. It may, but the odds aren't very good. And I'm not the voice of a person who thinks, by the way, that, well, you know, it's all about you being happy. We want you to be happy. No, there is this thing called responsibility. There are men with families who are not being responsible. They're not doing the right thing. Oh, they want to be happy. Well, they're happy at the racetrack gambling away all the money. They're happy in a bar drinking. They're happy going to a bar where scantily clad women become even more scantily clad. That makes them happy. Well, it also makes them miserable human beings, and it also makes them irresponsible. Yeah, so you see how that works out. I don't quite understand why we have gone away from the relationship that we have with our husband or our wife, the relationship that we have with our kids, the relationship that we have, if you're my age, with grandkids, and the peace that you can get in putting your head down at night knowing that today, to the best of my ability, I just tried to do the right thing. I don't really understand why people can't take some solace and some satisfaction in that, and I rather think that we should, and I rather think that we should, to recap, I think we should look externally for spiritual answers, because we're not going to find those inside ourselves. What I know of God, I read. I read in the Scripture. Otherwise, I know nothing of God. Oh, I can look out at nature and I can come to some conclusions that certainly there is something more powerful than myself. I can look up at the heavens at night, and I can see all the stars and the planets, and I can think there's something vastly bigger and more powerful than myself. But I don't know anything specifically about who that could be, except because of Scripture. But then when it comes to myself, and when it comes to those decisions that I make, and those choices that God allows me to make in my life, well, as they say, I am a free moral agent. I can do what I please, and you can too. I can decide today that I'm going to find some way to contribute to society and do something that society finds valuable enough that they'll pay me. Whether it's a chicken or whether it's 15 bucks an hour. But I can make some contribution to society. I can provide some service to somebody, somewhere, and I can find a way to make a living. And there it is. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is BulaNetwork.com. And today, no, this is not the Yellow Studio.